And welcome to the Social Contract, a Commander podcast. I'm Mike Allman, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Alex Lapp. Alex! What's up, man?
Not too much, Mike. Happy to be here. And today, we are doing a set review for Lord of the Rings? Is that right?
I thought we did that.
I feel like we already did one of those. Pretty recently, actually.
Oh, all right. We'll try and decipher all of that. But before we get into the cards themselves and all of the cool stuff, we have to talk about hey, if you want more of us stuff, yes. If you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/socialcontractEDH or search for the Social Contract in the search bar at their homepage. You can also check out the show notes for a direct link and also a direct link to our Discord server. There, it's easy to ask rules questions for Judge Alex, look at cards that are fun, entirely underutilized, give us some topics for the show, things along those lines, and a good community of people that are just like, hey, you know what's really fun? Having fun at the table and not necessarily, oh, this is the best build, this is the best blah. What's powerful but fun and fun but powerful kind of stuff? I think that's, if you dialed it in as far as what do we actually do, yeah, we could talk about we're here for, you know, group hug and stacks and political cards and group slug and stuff like that. But it's really just like, hey, how do I make this more fun for everybody, but also me, but also everybody? And that's kind of our thing.
Yeah, we have a good time here.
We do. And we're going to have a good time here with The Lord of the Rings some more again.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Is this the second movie? Well, I think that first of all, Lord of the Rings Tales of Middle-earth is based off of the novel series.
Well,
and you can tell that because it has Tom Bombadil in it, which was not present in the Peter Jackson films. Wisely cut for time, I suspect. But they did have that secret lair with the... What was his name? The 1960s films. The same guy who did Felix the Cat. What's his name?
Oh, I don't know, man. You're going... I was about to tell you how you were going more lore into Lord of the Rings
than I was ready for. And now
you're going even further and you're talking about 1960s movies. Alex, I'm not trying to make you blue here, but you are on an island right now. I can't...
Well, let's get back to it. This set, to my understanding... is the Lord of the Rings holiday gift box set. So this is going to be sold, not pre-cons per se, but in the style of a secret lair, but it will be sold retail.
Okay.
And these cards, if you look at them, all form large panoramas, actually two dimensional panoramas.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw them do that with a couple of different cards. That's cool.
And that is really cool. It looks really good, and that's how they display it. That's how they're displayed on the shelf when it eventually comes to sale. You'll just see all of the cards sort of in a grid, and it'll form a picture of battle, a tale of Lord of the Rings. And there's not that many newer cards that were released in this holiday set, but Lord of the Rings, as we know, if you listen to our Lord of the Rings episodes, that was a very political set, Mike. They had a political precon.
It's going, man. I think I'd love to say that we're ahead of the curve. I think that we're just, you know, we're our entire existence on why we play Magic the way we do and why we decided to start this, you know, conversation and see if anybody else is willing to listen to it. By the way, hey, thanks for listening. Is because, like, hey, this is a really fun format, Commander. What are some ways that make it different? Well, it's the multiplayer aspect. It's the keeping other people involved. It's the, you know, the ability to make deals and stuff like that. It's the player aspect of the game more than just the cards themselves. So leaning into that and giving more options for opportunity to actually interact with the opponents, quote unquote, rather than just card says tap, attack, good. I think that, you know, it takes a little bit of development cycle for cards to be made and be tested and be thought about. And we're starting to see the fruits of that in all these sets. Like you said, there's a couple of sets we went through and the entire set We got like 8 cards that we can talk about. This is basically a big secret lair, and we're going to be talking about 10 cards today.
Yes, to my knowledge, this is roughly about a third of the cards in the release. I think they released between 30 and 40 new cards, and we're talking about 10 of them today, which is nuts to think about, Mike.
Yeah.
10 is how many we got in like a full set release a few years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And like one of the, like the actual, like, you know, it's like Magic's 19 or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's
core set full,
big. Yeah, core set, like big blocks. And this is a small block, but we're going to take a lot of it. Speaking of which, let's just get into it.
Why don't you start
me off with our first card here.
Okay, we're going to start with White's Courageous Resolve. Is 2 and a white, 3 mana for an instant. Up to 1 target creature you control gains protection from each of your opponents until end of turn, draw a card.
That's pretty cool.
And then it has Fateful Hour. If you have 5 or less life, haven't seen that ability word in a while, mm-hmm. You can't lose life this turn, and you can't lose the game this turn, and your opponents can't win the game this turn.
That's nuts.
It is nuts. That's not going to happen very often, but that will also be able to come into play if somebody is bringing you basically to lose the game by reaching 0 life. Anyway, let's talk about the first part, because that's the part I'm really interested in.
Up to one
target creature you control gains protection from each of your opponents until end of turn. So, number one, right off the bat, it's unblockable for your opponents.
Yeah.
It attacks in, it's going to hit true. It's going to get the damage. It's going to do whatever it wants to do. It also can't be hit by spot removal. It can't be targeted, Mike.
Right.
Because it's dead. Can't be blocked, dealt damage, equipped or enchanted, blocked or targeted. And we're going to probably see some more of that in a minute here. But protection from opponents is extremely powerful. We saw many years ago the card True Name Nemesis in a commander deck. It was a merfolk that you named an opponent and the creature had protection from that opponent and everything they controlled. And that was so strong that it saw play in Legacy.
This is a very cool card. It still sticking to the first part. If this was 2 and a white for just the first half, one target creature you control gains protection from each of your opponents until end of turn, draw a card. If that was it for the card, this would still be a pretty decent card.
Yeah.
Can we agree on that?
I agree with that, but then we have the second part, which I think, goodness, when's the last time we saw Fateful Hour? Was that in Innistrad at some point? Maybe during the Avacyn fight?
I couldn't even tell you.
It's been a long time since we saw Fateful Hour, but if you have 5 or less life, you can't lose life this turn, you can't lose the game this turn, and your opponents can't win the game this turn. That's giving me Angel's Grace, Mike.
So I really like the second part.
Yes.
I'm glad when we differ a little bit. We both like this card.
I think the second part is good.
It's harder to happen.
It doesn't have to come into play for you to want to cast this spell.
Yeah.
But if you get it, that's a huge bonus.
Right. And I don't like the idea of just a 3 mana instant that says you can't lose life this turn. Your opponents can't win the game.
Right, because that's already a 1 mana instant with split second.
Right. Well, that plus like, I don't like the idea of just playing a card easily and saying, no, your combo win con actually doesn't exist.
Sorry. Oh, well, I love that.
See, by itself, as a at that point, I just...
No, I only have it in my Kaikar stacks. That's the only place I've run.
And that's reasonable. But, like, the idea that this is something that is... We talk about upside on cards. We talk about modal cards. This, to me, is... You know, it's not modal, obviously, but it is one of those things where it's like, hey, the thing that I want to do with this card most of the time, the first thing, protection from opponents for one creature, and cantrips itself, which is kind of cool. That's a good enough card. And then the situational, I'm looking at this for 2 different decks and for 2 completely different reasons. The, you know, Boros, red, white, extra combats, cool combats kind of thing. Great, I'm going to have protection from my opponents and I'm going to try and get a second combat. Or I'm going to try and get in a creature to swing for commander damage to win.
That's a good point. If you have extra combats, this is lasting through all of them on that turn.
Right. And then the Fateful Hour, what does white like to do when it's combined with black? Life manipulation. Cool.
Yes.
I'm going to pay 30 life for, I don't know, it doesn't matter. I have 5 life. Cool. You can't win now.
You can't lose life this turn. That's interesting. And strictly better than your life total can't change.
Right. Exactly. It's Fateful Hour. That is an interesting mechanic that I haven't... You're right. I don't
know. It's been a long time since we've seen it. And in Commander, it seldom comes up because 5 is a much smaller fraction of 40 than it is of 20.
Right.
So you actually being in that range is not as common. You would think that somebody would start to polish you off at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But it could come into play, and this is a very interesting pillow fort effect, Mike.
Well, the other part of it, too, is with Commander, a lot of the times when people do damage, like, mm-hmm. unless it's a swing wide and I'm going to hit you with a bunch of creatures or I'm going to hit you with a, you know, 70-70 trample indestructible or whatever, a lot of the damage is I'm going to hit you, and then I'm going to hit you, I'm going to ping you 45 times. It's a lot of repeated effects that happen.
So this can get in the middle of that.
Go ahead. Keep repeating that effect. I'm at 40 life. I'm at 39. I'm at 5. Oh, hey, in response.
That's a good point, Mike. And that goes to a rule segue that I'm sure you'll just love. In Magic Tournament play, we have this idea of shortcuts and infinites, right? We all understand that on an intuitive level. Hopefully I understand it. With the CommandersPublic.com website. But basically, if you're able to establish that an action or a series of actions that you'll do will result in your ability to do them an arbitrary number of times.
Right.
It is your responsibility as the comboer to declare in stone the number of times that you are going to do it. And I think informally, this definitely does happen. I think people do know in the LGS, they're like, you can't say infinite, just say 1 trillion or whatever.
Yeah. They have to pick a number. Billion D-times.
And whatever number they pick, they have to stick on it. Because after that, according to the Magic Tournament rules, your opponents may choose to respond on any iteration of that loop in advance. So you, Mike, can say, okay, your combo starts to go off. On the 35th iteration, I'm responding. And they're not allowed to change what they're doing.
I enjoy your Nekusar deck. I will do this when I am about to lose.
Yes, you are 100% allowed to do that, and they have to stick with what they decided.
And you can continue to draw make everybody, including yourself, draw 40 million cards.
Yes.
That's pretty cool. I like it. Let's move on to our next one here.
This is
Galadriel is Dismissal.
Yeah. Look at that cost, hey, Mike.
Yeah, I'm scared anytime I see something in white that says one instant.
That's my favorite kind of white card.
I bet. White for an instant. Target creature phases out. If this spell was kicked, and the kicker is two and a white, target player controls... Each creature, holy cow.
It just blew his mind.
Yeah, sorry, I skipped one word each time because I said, no, that doesn't exist. Okay, we're just going to redo that because, holy cow, Galadriel's Dismissal, white for an instant with kicker two and a white. Kicker, as a reminder, you may pay an additional two white, so two and a white, as you cast this spell. Target creature phases out. Cool, you phase out a creature for a white.
Mm-hmm.
If this spell was kicked, each creature target player controls phases out instead. As a reminder,
wow.
Treat phased out creatures and anything attached to them as though they don't exist until their controller's next turn.
Mike.
So how wide open do you want somebody to be?
Didn't we just talk about quite recently there was a March card. I think it was from maybe from Kamigawa Neon Dynasty.
Uh-huh.
There was a blue card.
Yeah.
Had you pay X into it, where X is the number of things that phase out.
Yeah, and I don't remember if it was XX or if it was just X.
It was just single X. It was just single X.
But, wow. Okay.
This says kicker, but really it feels more like overload.
Yeah, no, this, yeah, it does, and
but I like that it's not... But we know all keywords are kicker.
I like that it's target player, though, and it's not, you know... So, first of all, target player. I'm going to save my stuff. Target player, you're going to attack me with all of your stuff? No, you're not. All of your stuff is going to go away. Target player, I'm going to alpha strike you.
No,
and all of
your
blockers
not.
Are gone. Like, it's just the amount of wiggle that you have with this. It's one white to remove something from being a problem immediately or protect one of your own things. It is four mana to ruin somebody's day or protect all your stuff. Yikes!
This is a really good card. Offensive political version of Teferi's Protection, and I'm 100% here for it.
That's really good. It's very powerful. I like that it's not all players. It's not all opponents. Well,
we're in white. We can't be doing that.
Right. But we're also in white for a four mana spell. Yes,
and this, honestly, I mean, we've seen spot removal in white for two and double white.
Yeah.
And this is modal.
No, this is modal. And here's the thing. It's not... It's there for a really big play, but... I like when stuff phases out versus exile. I like when it's, hey, you can get this stuff back. It just needs to take a needs to take a breather.
Let's remind our players quickly what phases out means. And you may be well familiar with this, but you know I like to go over my fundamentals. Phases out,
100%.
When a permanent phases out, it's treated as though it does not exist, right? It's still in the same zone. It has not changed zones. It doesn't lose any of its memory of itself. It doesn't lose any counters. But we treat it as though it doesn't exist, right? If it's a creature, it can't attack or block. It doesn't have any abilities. It can't be removed due to board wipes or spot removal. And then, the way that I was initially taught about it, because before Teferi's Protection, phasing did exist, but it was way, way back in the day.
Yeah.
The way that I was taught about it was, we just put a cardboard box over all the cards that are phased out. They're still there. You just can't see them or do anything to them. Anyway, so they will all phase back in on their controller's next untap step. Before they untap, at the beginning of the untap step, everything will phase back in, and then they'll do untaps.
Right. That's so cool. I this is a very cool spell.
This is great. And so cool on the art. Like, those orcs are just getting wrecked.
They're sad.
Galadriel is completely destroying these orcs.
Get out of here. What do you got for blue for me?
Yeah, so let's move into blue. Mists of Lorien, which is a 2 and a blue 3 mana for a sorcery with replicate. We're really sampling keywords from across Magic's history.
Uh-huh.
When you cast this spell, copy it for each time you pay its replicate cost, which is a single blue mana. You may choose new targets for the copies. We have not seen that keyword in many years.
Yep.
Return target non-land permanent and each other non-land permanent with the same mana value as that permanent to their owner's hands. So let's talk about the base version first, then we'll talk about replicate.
Sure.
The base version, as a sorcery, you'll pay 3 mana, you'll target a non-land permanent, and you'll bounce it, as well as bouncing every other non-land permanent
that has the same mana
value. Yeah. Now, mana value is the new-ish term for converted mana cost.
Yeah.
It does not have to match on color. It only has to match for the total combined mana cost. Now, if we replicate, which we can do any number of times, we can pay blue any number of times, you will then bounce an additional target non-land permanent, as well as each non-land permanent that matches its mana value.
Right.
Which, the amount of value you can get off of just replicating once or twice is explosive. Mike, what do you think about this?
This goes in every token deck ever.
This is so nuts. Yeah, first of all, most tokens that are not made of as copies of other permanents, do not have a mana cost, so their mana value is zero.
Right.
So hit one token, you'll hit them all.
Yeah. Well, the idea of, I want this for token to combat token decks. I also want this in my token decks, so I can just. Right. What number do you pick? I don't know, but it ain't going to be zero. You know,
it's not zero. And the fast mana guy's like, whew.
That's really good.
This is nuts, Mike.
We love a card that says, what would you like to do? And how would you like to do it? And this is very much a what would you like to do?
Kind of like Ratchet Bomb, but just faster and smoother and more flexible.
And it's, again, I don't care what anybody else says. I like things bouncing. I like things phasing. I like things where it's like, hey, I am not eliminating these cards from your
You're allowed to have it. Just for now, it's going away temporarily.
Everybody needs to calm down a little bit.
And this is a much, much nicer Psychrift. Like, yeah, you can just run Psychrift. You can just pay the 7 and just absolutely obliterate everybody's board and win the game. Or you can do a tactical strike.
Yeah, I like that. I have recently talked about in our Discord the fact that, hey, the EDH rec salt score. Is back.
Yes. And we're doing... Forgot to mention that. We are, if you can hear this, and we have just released it for the next few days or a couple of weeks here, EDH Rec is running its annual Salt Score submission. I'm sorry I interrupted
you. No, not at all. It's there. And here's the thing. You brought up Psychriff specifically. Psychriff makes me sad. It's a very salty card. That's
consistently rated highly on the Salt Score.
I'm not salty at this. And and the amount of value and the amount of stuff you can do with it, if you're playing your deck around stuff like this, it could be just as powerful. It's not gonna be 90% of the time, but when you Psychriff to win the game, or you Psychriff to stop somebody else from winning the game.
Basically, yeah.
This spell, when you use it, the way I'm looking at it is I'm going to use this spell to win the game or to stop somebody else from winning the game. I think it's awesome.
That's true. And if you're willing to commit as much mana as it costs to overload Psychriff into this, you're getting rid of pretty much everything that you want to get rid of.
I dig it. I understand it's not as good as Psychriff, but it's, you know, half of the cost pretty easily.
Also, just brief aside, it copies for each time it does replicate. Yes. So if you're in a blue copy matters deck, this is great because you can just copy it an arbitrary number of times and get a ton of value off of that.
Well, I mean, it also makes this hard to counter, doesn't it?
It does, because when you counter a spell, you're only countering that spell. So spells that, for example, like storm spells or replicate spells like this that copy themselves when they're cast, well, that's a cast trigger.
Right.
So unless you're countering the replicate cast trigger, all of those copies are still happening.
I know at some point I will buy this card. I will cast this card and I will be looking across the table from somebody who is playing blue and has enough mana up, and I'll be like, all right, great.
Yeah, you want to counter this?
Well, yeah. I'm just going to sit there and be like, all right, I'm going to Mists of Lorien. I'm going to replicate it three times. I'm going to pick two twice because I need to get rid of all of that stuff, and I really need to get rid of all of that stuff. I don't care if you've got
a counter. That's pretty funny. So you'd hit two meta value twice. Two things. Just so even if they counter that.
Yeah, counter it. Still do you have two counters? Mind. That's like at that point, I'm going to pay one mana for every, like, it's insurance. I'm going to pay one mana extra to make sure.
No, that's a good point. And you do have to play it like insurance, right? You cannot wait for the counter and then choose to replicate. You must replicate prior to passing priority.
It's very cool. I like that card. Let's move on to a whole lot of extra words for red here. We have Call Forth the Tempest. So we really like Mists of Lorien. It's a nice two and a blue that you can.
This is a make very bigger. Flashy.
This is a battle cruiser. Five red. So eight mana for a sorcery. But don't worry, you're not just doing this because it also has Cascade.
Double Cascade.
When you cast this spell, exile cards from the top of your library until you exile a non-land card that costs less. You may cast it without paying its mana cost. Put the exile cards on the bottom of your library in a random order. Then do it again. So it's eight mana, but it should be hitting three spells.
But Mike, that Cascade isn't just bonus value. What else does this thing do that might be caring about Cascade?
Yeah, about that. Call Forth the Tempest deals damage to each creature your opponents control, equal to the total mana value of other spells you've cast this turn.
Oh, my goodness.
So there was one thing that I read that made me very happy on this in particular. Total mana value of other spells.
Yes.
You've cast this turn. So, hey, this is an 8 mana big.
But you're not getting 8 damage.
Well, maybe.
You might
get more than 8 damage. But you're not getting it off this. So this is not an 8 mana, deal 8 damage, then do more damage, and also cascade twice. It is cascade twice and do some amount of damage.
This is kind of a little bit like a storm card.
Yeah.
Right, because you want to cast a bunch of spells leading up to it, and then you cast this one.
Well, I think of this as almost kind of the anti-storm, if that makes sense.
Oh, interesting.
It's an 8 mana. I'm going to cast, because if I'm trying to storm off, I'm probably not trying to storm off and cast this and go, okay, great, I'm going to.
Well, some of those storm cards are expensive, but some of them, like Grape Shot, are very cheap.
Right, stuff like that. In my head, it's, hey, I'm going to try and big mana value, and I'm going to hope that my Cascade is a 5 and a 4 that I get off of this. And I'm going to do 9 damage to stuff. I'm going to cast two other spells. It's going to be real cool. But Cascade on damage at sorcery speed. There's this is a cool card, but it's a fair card as far as I'm concerned.
And that's true, because you can just Blasphemous Act for one mana, and most often 13 is going to be bigger than the number that you're probably going to get out of this.
It is very likely.
But this is very flashy. You're right, Mike. Very battle cruiser on this
one. It's,
and you get the double cascade.
It's super cool. I like it. I like the card. I don't know how many decks I would put this in, but I do like the card. Because I don't know. Is this something where... Do you have to cheat this out for it to be worth it? Or is this a cool 8-mana spell because 8-mana spell that's actually two different spells and potentially board wipe?
Yeah, I think you want to get some additional value off of this, right? Because for 8-mana, yes, you're getting two extra spells, but it's possible that those are very small.
Yeah.
Right? Because it only has to be less than
I
eight.
Got my Soul most, Ring and most of the Rampant spells, Growth.
Yeah. Most of the spells in your deck are going to be less than 8 mana value.
Yeah.
So you're going to cascade. Sometimes you'll hit big, but most of the time you'll probably hit small.
Yeah.
So you really do want some extra value on this. Maybe you want some kind of damage multiplier. Maybe you want whenever
deck manipulation
creature dealt damage would die this turn, so it's exiled. Maybe you want to be copying this spell. I think that by itself, it's not amazing self-contained, but it could be a nice sort of high-end card, maybe in a red copy spell or pinger or something like that.
And I'm looking at it just as much on that end as like the, this is a card where if you cast it, you get that cool moment of everybody like leaning a little bit closer over the table to look at what the top of your
oh yeah, and you do the big reveal.
Yeah,
like
big
flip,
reveal.
Flip.
It's a forest. Boom. Hold on. Big reveal. Oh, that's a mountain. Big reveal.
I mean, that's, you've got to love that in your Vivictus deck, right? The big reveal.
Oh, it's,
like, ooh, what did they get? Well, what did they get?
I like that because it's for everybody.
Yes.
That was my first thought. Again, that I'm tempted constantly by new cards, by the Vivictus
deck.
Have to stay disciplined. Nope. There will be no instants or sorceries. I will always flip something over. And then they're like, hey, you sure you don't want to call forth the Tempest? And I'm like, I do.
It's funny how many red cards have shown up lately that are so similar to Chaos Warp, but they're also, of course, non-permanent spells,
right,
and they would fit so perfectly into your deck, Mike.
I like the, let's call it not adjustment. I like the secondary path that red is taking with its targeted removal and like board wipe potential.
Where, yeah, it's the chaos.
Yeah,
we love the chaos.
It's good. It fits. Speaking of things that red does, and red does better than anybody, why don't you go ahead and talk to me about our next card here?
Oh my, you're talking about Battlecruiser. Isengard Unleashed, 2 in triple red, that is 5 mana for sorcery. Damage can't be prevented this turn.
Woof.
If a source you control would deal damage this turn to an opponent or a permanent an opponent controls, it deals triple that damage instead. And just for the gravy, we got flashback 4 triple red. That's 7 mana for the flashback. Mike, this wouldn't be an awful card to hit on your cascade for Call Forth the Tempest.
Yeah, yeah, no, that would be pretty great.
Run them both. Yeah, so can't be prevented. This is great. We talked about in a recent episode about rules. We talked about protection and debt, and I'm always talking about it. One of the aspects of debt is quote unquote, scare quotes here, can't be damaged. But you remember, we actually looked in the rule book, and even though the other parts say can't, damage doesn't say can't. In the rules about protection, it says prevent all damage of that quality that would be dealt to the thing with protection. But can't be prevented overrides prevent this damage. So this will pierce protection, Mike.
So our courageous resolve and all of our love for that, this is something that says...
Well, this goes right through
it. I can't lose. It can't be damaged. It said, well, you can't.
Oh, yes, it can.
Yeah, sorry. My can't bigger than your can't.
I have a real can't. You have a phony paper can't.
Well, this is paper, too.
It is, but this says the word can't on it.
That's all right. If they argue with me too much, I'm just going to flash it back again later. Holy
cow. Oh, my God.
This is cool. I like Battlecruiser. They are helping.
So, Mike, what would happen if you cast this and then flashed it back after it resolved? So you do triple, that's 9 times the damage.
That's a lot of...
So everything that normally does 1 damage, it would do 9.
That's a lot of damage. That's a lot of mana.
Yeah, that's a lot of damage.
I'm just going to figure... I'm just going to have the...
I saw this deck in half.
I'm just going to just copy it, too. Just to have fun with it.
This, like, we love some splashy Battlecruiser spells up in here.
Oh, this is absolutely going in the Jeskka and Artem.
Oh, heck yeah.
Just because I want to activate Jeskka's zero ability. Because you already have that triple
effect on there.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to activate Jeskka's zero ability. Yeah. I want to cast this spell, then I want to flash it back, and then I want to say, I'm going to hit you with this 1-1, you're dead.
How am I dead? Well, because it does triple.
Triple.
Which is 27 I'm gonna triple cubed times you. The amount of damage.
Let's have fun. That's so
my,
nuts.
My cool commander card. Hits you for 1, which is to say it hits you for 27.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I guess Arden's a 2-2. Well, so,
that's
yeah.
Double 27.
It's still super overkill, but
it
still
is,
works.
But it's very like funny.
It's very funny. Cool. Good job, Red. You redded the hell out of
Let's
it.
Go
Holy cow.
The exact opposite direction.
Yes. Yes. Looking over into green here, Legolas's Legolas's quick reflexes. this is a green for an instant with split second.
Where has this
we
been?
Love that. How you been? So split second as a reminder, as long as this spell is on the stack, players can't cast spells or activate abilities that aren't mana abilities.
God, split
this
second is such a special keyword.
The end. This happens. Untap target creature. Until end of turn, it gains hexproof, reach, and whenever this creature becomes tapped, it deals damage equal to its power to up to 1 target creature. Talk to me about this card.
Yeah, this is some interesting stuff is happening here, and let's talk about different scenarios, right? Let's talk about putting it on your own creature first. So let's say I have my commander. My commander is now untapped. Has hexproof and reach, and whenever it becomes tapped, it'll ping for its power to 1 target creature. And also it has split second. So first and foremost, right, it has hexproof on split second. This can be played just mundanely in response to spot removal or
I'm gonna untap
mass
this
removal
and
as
don't
long
blow
as it targets,
out.
And yep. It says no, yep. Your opponents cannot target this creature, which is great. It also has reach.
It's very cool.
So now it can block
it
flyers.
It can block.
Right.
Yep. And it is untapped, so it is
so it is
back
able
to
block.
Being
yes.
Available.
And yep. It also is whenever this creature becomes tapped, it deals damage equal to its power up to 1 target creature. So it turns it into a pinger for the rest of the turn, which we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
So just mundanely, this is, you know, this is your standard like Blossoming Shield. A heroic intervention for one thing.
Yeah.
But it also has these...
With Hexproof.
Yeah, with Hexproof. But it also has these weird things going on, right? So let's talk about maybe another scenario. Let's talk about what if we put this on one of our opponent's creatures, Mike? What would happen then?
Well, they become untapped and they become useful for a block. They if there is something where it real big and, hey, you're going to go to... Do something great. I would like you to tap that and do some
damage
to something.
What if you did
like,
this at the start of combat? You know your opponent's going to swing in big, right? You know that somebody's probably going to try to stop that from happening. So nobody can stop that attacker with spot removal. It's not going to happen. And then when it attacks, it becomes tapped unless it has vigilance, and then it'll ping for its power. So if you're hitting maybe your opponent's big fancy beater with this, maybe their Eldrazi, something like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, now it's a Hexproof Eldrazi that pings for a huge amount of damage and also attacks, so it's probably annihilating some stuff. This is a very interesting thing that I feel like this would go well in maybe a combat trick deck, What do you got?
We did the thing again, and I am much approving of it. You went broad as far as like, oh, this is something you can use.
Yeah, what do you got? You got a specific use case here.
I have a very specific use case. I have a Savala Explorer Return deck where the entire premise of that deck is to win. It's to win with Helix Pinnacle, but not to go infinite with it. So it's I'm going to I call it Savala of everybody gets all the turns because I'm going to tap and untap that mana ability to parlay and draw cards into people's hand and get myself as much extra mana as possible. So there are a bunch of weird one mana cantrips and one mana enchantments and artifacts that allow to untap specifically for Sylvala to do all
this.
That
sounds like a great deck.
It's really fun. The idea of being able to do that, and also whenever I tap Sylvala, I'm going to do two damage to a creature. It's very fun to me.
Nobody is,
and it's split second, hexproof.
It's spot removal protection, and also the thing you're already doing with Sylvala Explorer Return is now giving you value.
Yes.
Once over.
It is a pillow fortied kind of deck, but it has it's me. So there's a lot of battle cruisery kind of things in it. As far as Pillow Fort,
yeah.
The idea of, oh, here's my one mana card that I'm like, well, I'm going to untap with Sylvala four times this turn.
Ooh.
I guess I'm going to do eight damage to stuff.
I guess you are. Probably remove a couple of things while you're at it.
Mike, a thing or two, yeah.
Is this card just better than Legolas the card?
Poor Legolas. Here's the thing. I do like the fact that Legolas the card is like, fine. And then the cards that describe Legolas, like it's like Legolas's quick reflexes are very good. They're very
Legolas
good. They're better than
so
Legolas himself.
That you can't react back in time. You don't have time.
I like this card. It's very cool. It's very good on theme. Very nice.
I like in the Peter Jackson films, or maybe when they moved on to Hobbit. I'm not sure when this happened, but initially he was like a very good archer and tracker, and his feet scarcely left imprints in the snow, and he was able to see things far away with his eyes. What do your eyes see, Legolas?
What do your elves see?
And then eventually, I forget which movie this was, he's like, there's a bridge or something collapsing, and he's making stepping stones out of the falling bricks as he climbs them, which is like Spider-Man level.
He goes from I'm a very cool like archer ranger kind of person to now I'm an Avenger.
Yeah, exactly.
It's movies. It's how it works. He's better than Hawkeye. Hawkeye
is better than Hawkeye. Hawkeye's just some bridge. Guy.
Yeah.
Legolas is an elf man.
I like this. Talk to me about our next card here as we move into multicolor. Oh, yeah.
Well, Mike, this is an Izzet card, and you know that when you and I talk about an Izzet card, it's probably going to involve some political shenanigans.
Something weird,
So Felbeast's Shriek is blue-red, that's two mana, for a sorcery. Okay. Each opponent chooses a creature they control. First of all, just take a pause here. Each opponent chooses...
Hexproof doesn't exist.
Each opponent chooses is basically just my favorite three words in the game. each opponent chooses a creature they control.
I think I like each player chooses more, but that's only also by fine. A little bit. But
one of my favorite things to punch into Scryfall is the word chooses.
Chooses and each. Very
and
good.
Creates. Also a
creates.
Good yeah. Yep. The plural forms of these. Each opponent votes. Chooses a creature they control. Tap and goad the chosen creatures.
Hey!
Until your next turn, these creatures attack each combat if able, and attack a player other than you if able. It also has splice onto instant or sorcery for two red, blue, four mana, which, I mean, we're just pulling from all throughout Magic's history. As you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you may reveal this card from your hand and pay its splice cost, which is two blue-red. If you do, add this card's effects to that spell, which is great. Now, we have seen a couple of splice on the instant, or splice on the instant kind of things. In some Kamigawas, we had splice on the arcane, which is a very specific kind of instant sorcery. It was a type. But this will splice onto anything, and you will pay double the rate, but you'll be able to use it multiple times.
It's very cool.
So let's read this one more time. Each opponent chooses a creature they control, tap and goad the chosen creatures.
Nice.
Now, that's so curious. Usually, Mike, when you're trying to goad something, that's almost a form of removal / pillow fort where you're deciding what the threat is, and then you make that thing attack. But now your opponents choose it. But talk to me about this.
So here's where I'm coming from on that. Each opponent chooses a creature they control, tap and goad the chosen creatures. I like that this is a two mana spell that's sorcery speed because I'm going to do this before combat. So, hey, I'm going to get some blockers out of the way potentially.
Exactly.
I'm going to make people make some hard decisions. And in the worst case scenario, that's not what I want to do. I need to protect this. I need to do this. I need to do this. Well, great. I'm just going to keep this in my hand, and I'm just going to splice it into the I'm going to splice it onto instance a decent amount of the time. And it's, okay, great. I'm going to do this on your turn. I'm going to do this on your turn. I'm going to do this on your turn. I like this a lot.
This is a really cool effect, I mean, we're just seeing more and more goat. Goat has become, if not evergreen, it's become deciduous, R&D might say. It frequently appears in many different sets, even though it isn't a core keyword like reach or fly.
I feel like it was I think it was the first Commander Legends set where they made a Death Touch commander, to where it's like, hey, you can have a Death Touch theme deck now. Right. It works. I think we're close enough to where you can absolutely have a Goad based deck.
100% I agree. Could make a Goad deck now.
What colors is a Goad deck? Probably definitely at least red. It's probably red black, and it maybe includes blue.
Yes.
It's definitely red black though.
There's quite a few Goad things that are also in blue, so you might include blue, but red and black with
Rakdos for sure.
Absolutely.
But yeah, no, this is a very cool card as far as, hey, the low side of it is still effective. It's a 2-mana sorcery.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of modal stuff.
Yeah, I like that a lot. We're going to move on to a Boros card here. Alorin's Searing Light, 2 red-white for an instant. Each opponent exiles a creature with the greatest power among creatures that player controls. That's a very cool thing. It's a little overcosted, but it's fine. There's also Spell Mastery. If there are 2 or more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, Alorin's Searing Light deals damage to each opponent equal to the power of the creature they exiled.
Wow, that is very Boros.
Like, just the idea of, hey, everybody, get rid of your biggest thing. Also, it hurt.
Right. It's phrased like they choose, but they only choose if there's a tie for the highest power.
Right. Yeah, it's everybody's getting rid of their biggest thing unless, you know, tie goes to the thing you want to lose right. the least.
And then whatever that value on that power was, assuming you have Spell Mastery, which I think you would try to do.
100%.
You can have either 2 instants, 2 sorceries, or 1 of each in your graveyard. Mm-hmm. And it would not count this card. This card is on the stack when it resolves.
This is very cool. As far as we're going to exile, typically, we're going to exile 3 things for 4 mana. And more likely than not, they are going to be the biggest threat to us at the time. Also, there's the upside of, I'm also going to make these things burn you on their way
right.
out.
I think if you're getting Spell Mastery consistently, you're in a Spell Slinging Boros deck, I think this is phenomenal value, Mike.
Yeah. It feels counterintuitive, but I kind of want to put this in the Brian Stoutarm deck. Where it's, I'm doing a lot of threaten effects. I'm doing a lot of steal a creature kind of things. And I'm putting enough things into the graveyard to where the Spell Mastery should be in effect more times than not. But, hey, you know what? Okay, cool. I will die this turn. I can't steal that thing. Okay, great. Exile creature. It doesn't say target. It's just, what is the greatest power among creatures that player controls.
Right. The interesting thing, not to dump on Voltron even more than we already do, but...
We!
Then I.
There we are. Continue.
Then I already do. Well, Voltron is particularly vulnerable to this, right? Because if you have an edict effect wherein an opponent will choose something they have and sacrifice or exile it, usually a Voltron deck would want to sort of mitigate that by maybe running a couple of supporting creatures or tokens so they have something to get rid of in the event of an edict effect. But with this, considering probably how big they've pumped up their commander, there's probably nothing else on their board that's going to be tied or larger that they could choose to exile, and they will then have to exile their commander.
Right. No, it's rare that you get the Voltron deck where the power of the Voltron is, you know, 3.
Less.
there's something else out there.
Right.
So it is definitely effective in that capacity. But again, if there was just having to pick, I don't want to do a 4-mana exile effect on one creature.
Not particularly.
But it, I would be totally fine with doing a 4-mana exile effect on 3. I'm okay with that. As far as its floor, I feel like it's fine. The ceiling is pretty good.
Well, here's...
But the floor is fun.
Here's an interesting wrinkle. If you think about Eldrazi, as I often do, a lot of the Eldrazi and some of the big, very high value that you might be interested in exiling with this have the clause, if this creature would enter the graveyard from anywhere, shuffle it into its owner's library.
Yeah, the exile is great on this. It's
And then, you know, you hit him for 12.
It's a very specific... Right. It's a very specific type of removal. But it's a very effective
as graveyard reanimation becomes more and more common, as and it has been for years. But obviously, graveyard support just keeps getting better. Removing by destroying and sending to graveyard. Let's just say that exile is worth an increase in cost.
Well, I'll tell you what, Alex. I'm with you. Despite what you said about one of my favorite types of Voltron. No, it's okay. We're going to fix it because we're going to talk about two pretty synergistic with Voltron cards here. Do you want the artifact or do you want the land?
How about you take the artifact and I'll take the land?
Cool. I love equipment. Nazgul Battle Mace. This is a 5-mana artifact equipment. Equipped creature has Menace, Death Touch, Annihilator 1, and whenever an opponent sacrifices a non-token permanent... Put that card onto the battlefield under your control unless that
Look,
player
it's,
pays
it that
three
betrays
life
the mace.
Creature... Yeah. Yeah, the mace. It's the mace that betrays with an equip cost of 3. So, as a reminder, whenever a creature with Annihilator 1 attacks, defend
Right, Annihilator's great because it's on the attack trigger, not a damage trigger. And just like it that betrays, right, the sacrifice becomes yours unless they pay. Talk to me.
So, Let's get a couple of things out of the way early. 5-mana for an artifact.
Well, if you're in an equipment deck, you're probably doing something. Maybe equip for free.
Correct. Yep. So 5-mana to get the artifact out, a lot. 3-mana to equip it, a lot.
Value high.
If you're playing equipment, you're fine.
You're probably using like Cigar or something deck, that's equipped for 0.
Yeah, one of these things, at least, if not both of them, are much less on the cost. I love the idea of the Menace, the Death Touch. I love Menace and Annihilator on an attack. Because, okay, great, I'm on the attack. Boom, I'm going to get rid of something, or you're going to get rid of something. By the way, I hope it's not
you
one
only
of
have two creatures,
creatures
and I
because
made
if you,
you
do,
sacrifice one
then,
of them.
Then,
so now my creature's not blocked. As a reminder, Menace says it can't be blocked by only one creature. It has to be two or more, double, triple, quadruple blocked. But with Death Touch, that's a really nasty combo, right? Because every creature blocking it will be dealt, presuming that you have enough power to go through. Every single one of those blocking creatures will die to Death Touch.
This is a lot of cool things. Okay. This sounds simple-ish, right? A creature gets Menace. Cool. Death Touch. Cool. Annihilator 1. Cool. The combination of all three of those things onto one card means that your combat and how you deal damage and what opponents have to choose after you lay out the information on that card, it's pretty neat. And by the way, this card is probably just doing 3 damage to somebody every time anyway.
If they're able to pay, they'll pay. This is Athreos. They don't want you to get that.
Yeah. No, it's their stuff.
But Mike, what if...
also, non-token permanent.
Ran that white board wipe that says, choose a number between 0 and 13. Each opponent sacrifices that many creatures.
Yep.
So
that's where I was going.
3 by 13? I don't think you can.
Well, just... And that's the thing. It's this is a cool card on its own as far as, okay... I'm going to put a lot of decisions on
exactly.
you. Here's the mini
make
game.
Our opponents
I
make
go
decisions.
To swing, figure it out. I like
it's
this card.
So
it
cool.
is. It's definitely overdoing some things.
I mean, it's
but
expensive,
it's overdoing things.
But it's so
it's
flashy.
Expensive. That's what I'm saying. It's not. It's flashy. I like that. There is some stake, but it's a whole lot of gristle, and that's fine because this is what's an equipment deck if not like hey. I don't know, I'm going to do a bunch of weird stuff. Here's my 3-3 that's got a mace and a sword and some boots and some armor and all this other stuff. And then just go through the list of the things that need to happen. And we've
talked about Annihilator, Mike, right? Annihilator seems like a pretty limited use for it, because when you attack, your opponent will choose a permanent that they want to sacrifice. And, you know, usually you'll think like, oh, they'll just sacrifice one of their treasures. You can construct scenarios, and there can be game situations where even Annihilator 1 is utterly devastating. Let's imagine you just wiped the board. So now they only have maybe a couple of things that were indestructible and lands. Okay, are they sacrificing their big indestructible thing, or are they sacrificing lands? These decisions can be very intriguing.
Well, that combined with the idea of just nobody wants to lose their stuff on terms that aren't their own. So the amount of times that this is something where, okay, this creature has Annihilator 1, or when this creature attacks, somebody lose something, whatever you call it. The amount of times that people are going to be willing to make a deal, that people are way more willing to negotiate when you're holding a stick that says, the sharper the stick, the better the negotiation.
Not just Annihilator 1, but they're all but forced to pay the 3 life if they're able, because otherwise you get it.
Yeah, this is a cool card. That said, I like the other one more. Talk to me about our last one here.
We might have to start including this in some of my decks. Minus Morgul, Dark Fortress, is a legendary land. Minus Morgul, Dark Fortress, enters the battlefield tapped. And it has...
Oh, man, that sucks. Well, this must be terrible.
we got some stuff cooking on this one, Mike. It has a normal mana ability, tap and add black. But it also has, if you pay 3 and a black, 4 mana, and tap it, put a shadow counter on target creature. For as long as that creature has a shadow counter on it, it's a Wraith, in addition to its other types. As a reminder, a creature with shadow can only block or be blocked by other creatures with shadow. So
this is awesome!
This is so incredible, Mike.
What are you talking about? Voltron isn't fun! Oh, this is the Voltron! Yeah, everybody's so playing shadow, Voltron now!
Shadow basically means unblockable. And if you put it on something that is trying to block your thing, maybe on an opponent's creature, well, that thing will always be able to swing in, but also it won't be able to block any of your stuff. This is, all right, first of all, we got the Maze of Ith, right? We got Rogue's Passage. we've got some cards in this area. What's that Gruul one that I love so much?
Oh, target creature gets +X/+ and trample.
Yeah.
I don't remember off the top of my head, but I know what you're talking about. Okay. I really like this card.
This card is so cool. I hope it's not like $27.
It's in a special release set. It's a legendary land.
You make one of your things unblockable. Does a very cool thing. Think about slapping this on an opponent's thing. Like, hey, you want your stuff to be unblockable and also the special thing we'll use later. Also, it can't block any of my stuff or anybody else's stuff.
So here's the other really, really small part of it. One of the commanders that came out with the Lord of the Rings set cared about you having lots of Wraiths.
That's true. Wraith is a creature
this thing,
type. Yep.
This thing turns things into extra Wraiths. Right. Like,
so in your Wraith
so
type
small.
Deck,
this just it's slots so right small, in. But it's so neat. And I love the idea of like, I'm gonna get this land and then I'm gonna care about about the Wraith creature type. But like, Shadow is one of those abilities that I like. I wish it was around more because
it's old.
It's old. You know, I'd rather do this than what's the blue commander where all creatures you control have horsemanship or whatever. That's $1 million.
Oh, yeah,
like, I like the idea, like, no. Yeah, this thing, hey, it has shadow now.
Well, this is interesting, right? Hey. Because it doesn't grant them shadow.
It puts a shadow counter on them.
So even if, well, first of all, you can do counter manipulation, right? If you have something like the Ozolith or maybe something else that can move counters around, you can always play with that. Always cool stuff there. But
right,
that means that even after this leaves the battlefield, even if other things change, as long as the counter is on there, it has shadow.
Right. And we've talked about the, oh, it's really cool to be able to put a, you know, shadow counter on a creature and then it's unblockable, and that's really... Hey, you know what's also awesome? Yeah. I'm going to make this creature unable to block an attack. Like, that's... It's very cool, the... You're basically dividing all of the creatures in the game into these are the ones that are able to interact with the others. You almost create
like a little mini game of combat within the game, which we love.
It's very cool. I like that. I like this card. And it.
I mean, this is just so... I mean, because originally when Shadow came, I think it was in the dark. I don't know how far back it was. Maybe 20 plus years ago. Mm-hmm. It was this interesting gamut, right? Shadow basically meant unblockable, but also it can't do any real blocking. But with this card, they've turned Shadow into a political keyword, which is the coolest thing ever, Mike.
Yeah, no, it's a very cool card. I remember the older cards where I saw Shadow and it looked like this kind of like ghostly, undead kind of knight thing. I don't even remember what it is. But it was the coolest card ever, even though it was terrible. But it was like a 2-2 with Shadow. And I'm like, that's awesome! And... Hey, let's take that concept and put it on, I don't know, an Eldrazi. Or, like, let's take that and we're going to put it onto a Ruhan of the Fomori. And here's my 7-7 commander that's going to swing randomly. Like, all in all, this is pretty cool as a concept for a utility land. That, again, the downside is it comes into play tapped. The upside is that it taps for regular mana and you have the scary Rattlesnake at all times. People have to think, we talked about the minigame in the game itself when you're using this. The minigame before that, where people have to think about their combats and what they're going to do, because you have the opportunity to make things have shadow. It's very cool.
Now, the interesting thing is that I knew I'd seen something like this before, and we actually do have a couple of cards. Very interesting things here that synergize with Shadow in some way.
Okay.
So here's a couple. There was a Douthi Embrace, which is an enchantment for 2 and a black, 3 mana, and it has a black target creature gains shadow until end of turn. There's a very similar effect there. And then we also have Douthi Trapper, which is 2 and a black. It's a creature
Douthi minion. Yeah.
It's a 1/1 with tap, target creature gains shadow until end of turn. So this, it's not as though, and first, what's it? There was Tempest and Stronghold. Okay, not quite as far back as I thought.
But not recently.
So they were already playing with this idea of Shadow as a gambit with upside and downside in the past. But now we're bringing it into the modern age on a land.
Repeatable and semi-permanent.
Just as a sort of strange mention here. There is a card, Maze of Shadows, which is a very, very niche, unknown card from Tempest. It's a land with tap, add a colorless, and tap, untap target attacking creature with shadow, prevents all combat damage that would be dealt to and dealt by that creature this turn.
That is...
Do I think this will start seeing play? Probably not.
But you know what?
This is not the first land.
If I have Minas Morgul in a deck, I am much more likely to include that card than I would have otherwise. Yeah. All right, Alex, I'll tell you, do we talk about our favorite card from the set now, or do we talk about our bonus card that you threw my way?
Well, let's talk about our favorite card from the set now, and then we can talk about...
Hey, it's Minas Morgul. Oh, man, a big surprise. I like that card a lot.
I mean, honestly,
that's such a good card. There's so many good cards that we talked about. Like, normally we get through these, and you could probably tell on some of these cards, like, hey, that's pretty cool. I'm excited about it because, you know, we're talking about it and stuff. But, like, these are all really cool.
But if we're talking about cards that I might actually theoretically play, it'd be
Minas Morgul for sure.
But also Galadriel's Dismissal.
Yeah.
I think that this has potential.
I tell you, I think, like, the card... We talked about 10 cards. I think my 10th ranked card...
We did.
Out of, like, you know, my last ranked card, as far as how excited I am to play it, would probably be in, like, top 3 in a lot of other sets. So...
Which is fun. Like, we just... Our cup overflow with this political... It's
so... The Legolas's Quick Reflexes card. That's oh, yeah. one where I'm like, I'm not super crazy excited about it. It's a very cool card, but even though it's not something that I'm like, oh man, that's busting through the doors. That's so, I still know for a fact, oh, that's definitely going into this deck and that's going to be a cool card that I can use with it. You know? So just the fact that that exists is pretty cool. And I think that's a good sign as far as any kind of release where it's, oh, even the cards that I'm not thrilled and like, you know, take my money about, I'm still like very excited to get that card because it's going to go somewhere.
Yeah, it's as we've said, as you said at the beginning, we're starting to see more politics on the cards themselves. Whereas in the past, yes, we did have our nice political staples, but it's not like they were printing them every set. And most of the cards that would come out in a set, we would need to twist and use politically of our own volition. But a lot of these newer cards that we're seeing just have politics baked right in. And it doesn't take away any of the fun or the choice. Nope. And I'm just so pleased to see it. Mike, how did you feel about this holiday set?
Better than I thought I would, to be honest with you. I'm at the, you know, I love cards. I love when they come up with new cards and there's new ideas. I get a little oversaturated on the, oh, well, here's the IP so and here's the stuff and here's the stuff and now I'm paying
attention
to it.
There's like three sets being spoiled at once. You don't even know which one's the next
set. Yeah. Well, I mean, just think about our scheduling and it's like, all right, well, this is coming out. So we got to figure out what these cards are and how they interact and what we're going to talk about and what we're not going to talk, blah, 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 blah. All the behind the scenes stuff. So the idea that, hey, there's this mini set essentially. It's not a secret lair. It's not a mini booster set, or it's not boosters. It's not its full set. It's a concept.
It functions effectively as a secret lair or a from the vault set, you might say.
And it's very, and I'm like, all right, let's look at, oh, that's pretty cool. Oh, that's pretty cool. Wow. That's really okay. Okay. Yeah, and you know, lean forward in my chair a little bit as we're looking at some cards. They're pretty sweet. I'm excited to see what the costs on these is going to be. And then
right,
I'm be
because
very
they're
unexcited.
Not available yet, so we can't even see pre-sale costs.
So we might be talking about these as a theory more than an actual practice.
Some of these might be breaking $10, $15, $20, $30
here. Yeah, but that said,
what
pretty
if they
cool.
wanted to buy some of these cards online? Where,
well, they got some options, you know, but the one that I would recommend the most... you can go to our, in the show notes itself, we're going to have a direct link to be able to help out the show itself, and you'll be able to buy some of the cards at TCG Player, to our Bitly link. We'll have that in the show notes for you. And, there you can buy these cards. Well, I guess you can pre-order these cards, but technically not because we don't,
you can, but I don't know if I would recommend that. You might be able to pre-order the box set.
Yeah. I'd wait. But if there were other cards we talked about or other cards that are already on your list, or if you just want to see if these cards are available but might want to do some shopping in the meantime, go to our link. And that's going to be able to help out the show while it's also going to help you out. And it doesn't cost you anything. It's pretty cool. Alex, did you have one more card that we were going to talk about
Mike,
today?
Mike, I did have one more card. Now, these were not the only cards that have been sort of tacked on. This is not a proper set release. This is a supplemental set release. And as you know, on occasion, sometimes, just like this, Secret Lair will release novel cards as part of a Secret Lair, as part of Universes Unleashed. And incidentally, we have talked about cards like this. This is a silver-bordered, non-legal card, and I'm going to have some words about this in a second, from the seconds My Little Pony Secret Lair. So let's get into the card, and then we're going to talk about...
Every pony wins the game.
Yeah. Apparently, that's the only thing I'll ever be remembered
that's from. That's the only thing I'll ever remember from those cards, but let's go ahead and talk about this one. I'm down.
Fluttershy is a non-legal Secret Lair card for one green-white. That's three mana for a legendary creature, Pegasus. She's a 0/4 with Defender and Flying. So already some decent value here.
Yep.
But then she has an activated ability. That's why we're talking about it. For one and tap, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature with a tail target player controls. That's T-A-I-L, as in a horse's tail. stare down up to one target creature until end of turn. Well, what the hell does that mean? It right. can't attack or block as long as you're looking directly at it, right? So this is a silver border non-lethal card. We're seeing some mm-hmm. wacky, fun-time stuff in there. Now, before we get into the meat and potatoes of what this card is actually doing, just entirely setting aside My Little Pony, however you feel about that. I'm not a huge fan, personally. But, Mike, wasn't it in a recent unset that they did everything they could to convince us that we didn't need Silver Border anymore, and now we're just going to use the acorn stamp to indicate non-legality?
Right.
So all cards are just black border forever now. And silver border, which is instantly recognizable by even people with eyesight problems, are able to see right away that this card is 100% not legal in any format. Sure. Let's just do away with that and put an acorn stamp on it. But Mike, here it is again. The full silver border in all its glory. There it is. What happened?
So, I don't know. Maybe they released things in a different order than what they planned on. Maybe they forgot. Maybe Wizards was drunk. I don't know.
Maybe they love that heart hollow foil stamp too much. I don't know. Maybe the original My Little Pony cards had silver borders because that was a time when silver border made sense to them. It still makes sense.
See, the thing that bums me out the most about this is I love the idea of like looking at all of the art on the cards themselves and just being like, is that a tail? Is that,
recognizing elements in art is a frequent keyword effect in other arts.
And that's, but I really like the idea of, like, I'm going to give everything a +1/+1 counter as long as it's got a tail. Also, I'm going to glare at that thing, and it's not going to do anything.
So yeah, that part's interesting. You have the classic lockdown enchantment effect, but it's, as long as you're looking directly at it, it can't attack or block. Truly interesting. And it's always fun if you happen to be playing another game to try to catch people out, right? You're like, oh, you blinked.
I the idea of making a tail typal deck is interesting.
It is truly interesting. I remember many years ago, not too many years ago at this point, but we had heard, you know, rumors that there was that the previous unset had that the rules committee would consider allowing certain silver border cards.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
There was a temporary season, a month or so, that all silver border stuff was made temporarily legal, which was just wacky shenanigans. But the result of that was that some cards in Unfinity were fully legal black border style cards. Now they were all black border, but they were legal in Commander. But not the case mm-hmm. here. And that segue, as inappropriate as it may be, reminds me that this is our first episode recording since the unfortunate untimely passing of Sheldon Menery. Sheldon Menery, if I may, was the godfather of Commanders, what he called himself. This format was created by judges, by Sheldon Menery and his friends, way, way, way back in the day, way before Commander 2011, way before anybody had ever heard the word Commander in the context of Magic, and they called Elder Dragon Highlander, EDH, and we still use that phrase, we still use that today. Sheldon had been battling, he had a very public battle with cancer for many years, and he's been a very public face in the Magic community. Unfortunately, he did pass away recently between the recording of our last episode and this episode. And as whatever grievances that I may have expressed with the Rules Committee, and I think we tried to be very respectful towards them, in addition to being on the Rules Committee is an impossibly hard job because you have to please millions of EDH players, and we are not very easy to please. Also, dealing with protracted advanced cancer for many years of your life, I can't even imagine the pain and grief that he and his loved ones had to go through. I hope that he's finally found peace and that his family is able to find peace in his passing. But he was a monumental figure in the game of Commander, and I think that he mm-hmm. meant a lot of things to a lot of people. And without him, we wouldn't have this amazing game that we have today.
Yeah, Mike. My knowledge on Sheldon specifically, and frankly, the game of Magic as a whole, is less. So what I can say is this, and I, you know, not to bring everything down as we close the episode here, but they were an instrumental figure in creating something that you, me, people listening, and way more outside of that are all very passionate about, and that requires a certain amount of passion yourself. What they've done, what they did, and who they were is something that has given us something to celebrate. And all things considered, at the same time, this is a game that we're playing with people. So the people aspect is something that you and I care very much about, and he was one of the more instrumental people in putting together something that I care very much about. So my best to his family, my best to all of you playing, listening, take care of one another, enjoy each other's company, enjoy the game that we play, because at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's a game. So enjoy things, do things the way that you want to, and you know, maybe do something that you weren't expecting. Do something that you've been putting off to take care of yourself a little bit today, if you can. Alex, if somebody wanted to talk to you about any of the cards that we've looked at, anything that they've got questions about this game that we care about so much, or anything else along those lines, how would they reach you?
Absolutely, Mike. You're 100% right on that. Sheldon and his people, I mean, we would not have this incredible game that we have today if not for the work that he mm-hmm. did all those years ago and continued to do up until his unfortunate passing. If you wanted to talk to me online, you can reach me on Twitter at Lappermedic, LAPPERMEDIC. You can also contact us in our Discord, which we have a lovely, lovely committee in Discord. We love talking with them, and we're going to put a link to the Discord in our show notes if you'd like to come join our community. We don't have very many people in there, but everybody in there loves to talk about all of the things that we love to talk about, not just our podcast, but it's just a bunch of very nice folks, and we would love to have you. But Mike, we also have a Patreon for some of our most dedicated fans, and I think that we have a shout out to do. I think we have a shout out to do,
Mike. Okay.
Because since our last episode, we received our first patron at the Sultan of Stacks tier, which means that they basically have us over their knee. This person gets to ask us whatever they want us to do, and we'll try to do it. Lasa Ungdo, and I'm so sorry if I butchered that. If you are listening right now, thank you so much.
I'm getting Lasongdo for supporting the podcast. Getting it like it's lasagna, but with a do.
Okay. Well, however you pronounce that, Lasongdo, you have become a Sultan of Stacks. What does that mean? Well, that means they're supporting us at the highest level that we currently offer. And for that incredible contribution, we look forward to whatever ideas they have, whether that be making a deck for them, whether that be trying to get one of their favorite Magic personalities, if possible, onto the show, or doing a show topic of their choice, or signing one of their Feldegriffs. Whatever they want, if it's feasible, we will try to do it because of their generosity. Thank you so much, Lasongdo.
Appreciate all of you. Want you to take care of each other, like we said. And, hey, we're going to come back pretty soon here. We've got another couple of episodes planned. Should have some potential topics in the very near future for you to listen to, for you to ponder on. And, hey, in the meantime, like we said, get in the Discord server. Talk to us about other things you want to see, other things you want to do. Get into the Patreon, because, hey, keep the lights on for me. Electricity is very expensive. I run hot. Like, I'm uncomfortable if it's like...
We got to keep that AC running for Mike and for me as well.
But in the meantime, take care of each other. Take care of yourselves. We'll talk to you soon.